Right, good day and welcome to yet another edition of the Citizen Talk. This is where we invite different people to come and, you know, help us unpack some of the difficult issues that the country is facing. And you must be aware also that there's been a lot of politics also dominating news headlines in recent months. And you know, what makes it even more interesting is that everyone is building up to the 2024 general elections. You know, those elections are, you know, described by some as probably the most important since the 1994 elections. But today we want to specifically talk about service delivery. It's an issue that's affecting many people. I mean, Eskom is just one classic example, but apart from that, you know, you still have people who are embarking on protest action from different communities complaining about poor service delivery. And we thought, why not invite somebody who has had to deal with such issues? In fact, he's got quite a good track record when it comes to, you know, governance in local municipalities. And there is none other than Bongani Baloyi, who's the former mayor of the Midval local municipality. And we all know that that municipality is led by the DA. And he has since, you know, left the DA. He's now a new member of Action SA. good morning to you, Bongani. And thank you so much for agreeing to chat to us.
Thank you. Thank you. I don't think I'm a, we can still say I'm a new member of Action SA.
Yeah. You've gotten used to everything. You've now settled down nice and
Now I feel like I'm part of the furniture.
Yeah. No, but thank you so much for gracing our studios with your presence this morning.
Thank you. I really appreciate
thank
it.
You.
I think these are important conversations to keep having.
Yeah.
So we sensitize South Africans about what the structural issues are, what the law says, and what delivery actually is.
Yeah.
We speak loosely about, very casually about service delivery.
Yeah.
But what is service delivery really?
Absolutely.
Within the sphere of local government, within the sphere of provincial government and national government.
Mm-hmm.
Because sometimes people in a local level don't differentiate. They just see one government,
mm-hmm.
whether it's the delivery of housing, delivery of rail network, whether it's a delivery of reliable electricity, they see one government and they say to a mayor, you are not delivering services. And then you say, but what are those services?
Yeah.
And then you get into the technicalities and complexities of this different three-sphere government.
Yes.
Which is exciting for me. I really enjoy engaging more so, less of politics and more about the actual business of governing and delivering, because that's where the as they say, the rubber hits the road. And for me, that's the space I really enjoy the most.
Yeah, yeah. And that's what people expect at the end of the day, you know, services to be delivered. I mean, you spend quite a number of years at Midval, at the helm. What would you say, you know, are some of the highlights? In fact, let's even start from the beginning when you started. I think at the time you were the youngest mayor in the country.
Yes.
In what condition did you find Midval in, you know, when you started there a few years ago?
Look, it was in a very stable position.
Yeah.
Financially. I was very fortunate that my predecessors, from Marty Wenger to Timothy Nest, had really incrementally improved the institution. So at the point I came and was at the helm of the institution, I did not have to rebuild fundamentals. They had laid a solid foundation for me. So Timothy Nest, I always give him his dues whenever I speak about my tenure in Midval, because my tenure in Midval would not be what it is because it was defined by the foundation he had laid, the foundation Marty Wenger had laid previously. So you can tell that in Midval there was a track record of mayors coming in, building, improving from the next mayor and handing over to the next mayor and ensuring that seamless transition and seamless transfer of power without contesting and making it muddy as well. So when I entered Midval, Midval was not a institution in a bad financial position. We were building our reserves. We'd just gotten out of a credit position and overdraft position. And now it started building our reserves. So when Mayor Timothy Less left, we had about 15 million rands in reserves. When I left, we had close to about 250 million rands in reserves. Now, there's a story you don't hear often about local government.
Yeah.
And in, on our side, I mean, there was incremental improvement. When I knew I did not, when I came in, it was not about how do I drive a Bongani program.
Sure.
That's where you lose it. When you hear politicians saying, I'm going to drive my program and what was delivered, we're going to lose. For government, government requires a careful management and turning, like a Code 14 track. Mm. You can't do certain things because there's systematic ways of planning, approving, and delivery.
Sure.
So when you come in the middle and you want to temper at the stage of delivery implementation, then you're going to affect its reporting and equally accessing certain grants because you have not spent and the knock-on effect on things. So one has to understand that you need to take due care with how you manage this vehicle or this Code 14 called local government in a municipality. And I was fortunate that I was part of the executive for 2 years. I mean, I entered the executive at 24.
Yeah.
I was still very wet behind my ears.
Yeah.
So I was just frustrated that I want to be part of doing something. Mm. I can't be on the side. That's why I don't like being spectators or watching different people be in the arena, except if it's boxing.
Yeah.
But I really felt that the time for me to stand outside and not do anything and to leave others within the space of service.
Yeah.
And I felt I could do it younger. I could, whatever limitations that I had or restrictions, I have enough time to build. And my point of departure is that if you want to be Mandela, you must start now.
Wow.
So whether the Mandela we know spent 20 odd years in jail and you need to start now, but you need to start. That's the point.
Yeah. There always has to be a place where you have to start.
Right? Absolutely. Yeah. And my point of departure and starting my political career and most of my career in governance was Midvale. So I always knew at the beginning that this is not going to last. It's not a forever thing.
Mm.
I'm not going to be stuck here forever. For me, it's a stepping stone. It's a door I'm going to open for the next. But equally, it's a phase I'm going to use to entrench myself in government and governance and the methodology of delivery and perfecting it.
Sure.
And really understanding this discipline and skill of governing.
Mm.
And showing that you can do so. So for me, I was very clear. That's why at the point it had to come that I walk away. I knew many years before that that point I can see it.
Yeah.
So already at this point I started, I had an agreement with myself of how I wanted to leave. And I'm very happy that agreement I kept to myself.
Wow.
I left how I wanted to leave.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, when you look at the state of governance, of, you know, service delivery across the board in the whole country, how would you describe the situation?
It's in shambles. It's in a pathetic state. There's no governance. There's lack thereof.
Mm.
So there's no service delivery, in fact. So let me put it this way. Service delivery is the last part of it's the manifestation.
Mm.
It's what you receive. It's the water.
Yeah.
It's the starring of roads. So it's the last final step.
Yes.
Where you consume the service. What enables it and for it to sustain consistently? It's governance enabled by leadership.
Mm-hmm.
So it's the leadership that ensures that the operating environment has systems, processes, and ways to deal with public procurement in a way that it's transparent, it's competitive, and there's no malfeasance.
Yeah.
But equally, it's for leadership through governance to appreciate its strategic thrust and its strategic direction and to gear resources, warm body finances towards the attainment of these. Because you're running three different races in local government.
Mm.
One, it focuses on your current financial year and your spending. In your very same current financial year, you're looking back towards your past financial year performance.
Yeah.
While you're also planning for the future. So three races at the same time, simultaneously, that you're running. Now you've got leadership, you've got governance, you've got strategic thrust and the focus of the municipality. But equally, then you must enable a system where professionals work within guidelines, within delegations to do their work and ensure there's sufficient reporting. And equally, then performance evaluation.
Mm-hmm.
With this system of governance, so I've really unpacked the governance part, the leadership and its role, and the entire governance part. Then with this governance system, which is strengthened, which protects, which creates a particular environment in the operating environment, which then guarantees that what you plan will be able to be executed. Because what you plan, it's clear, it's specific, it's time-bound, all of those things. And then equally you go for procurement and you get the best person within the defined period of time. And then you've engaged your communities, then you must go down and deliver the service in the expected period of time. So what people see is the last stage.
Mm.
What compromises the last stage of the experience of the water, of the electricity, is the governance and leadership. Often governance is weakened by leadership because leadership does not want the services to go in a manner which is transparent, competitive. Mm. So they want to direct it in a particular vehicle to particular individuals, a particular party, friends, girlfriends, et cetera, et cetera. Sure. So when you look at the state of a municipality, you must appreciate its state of governance. And 9 out of 10 times, the consequence of the state of governance is the making of the leadership.
Mm. And I'm glad you keep on raising, you know, this issue around leadership. And I'm sure quality, you know, is key.
Absolutely.
And, you know, how you select the people that you're going to be working with, you know, in order to deliver those much needed services to the people.
Mm. No, absolutely. Well, firstly, let's ask the question, how do leaders or those we call leaders in inverted commas get to municipalities? Today we could be sitting in a shebeen, drunk.
Yeah.
And then we say, hey, but this thing of electricity is bad, man. Let's do something.
Yeah.
And then because you have got courage, the only thing that you have is courage. It's being
dipel. Yeah.
You decide to go and we mobilize us. We stop and we barricade a road. And then we create a havoc for everybody. And then media comes. Obo Stevens come there. They interview me. And now I'm speaking, articulating on behalf of the community.
Yeah.
And then political parties are looking and say, but who's this one?
Yeah.
It's not a branch member. Uh-uh. It's not a ward committee member or a counselor. Hey, they think this is the new leadership.
Yeah.
Let's get this boy in.
He's very charismatic.
He's charismatic. Yeah, he's got the people. This is who we want.
Yeah.
A person who's entrenched in this community and problems. Mm. Not understanding what he, no. Here, the only currency you have is bravery only.
Yeah.
And then they lobby this fellow. They get him in. Jiggy Jiggy, he's a counselor. And then Jiggy Jiggy, he finds himself as an MMC or a mayor.
Yeah.
So you see, there's no benchmark for leadership, for people who must come and provide administration and oversight over the public purse.
Yeah.
There's no minimum standard. It says as long as you're not a convicted criminal. But also that's contestable for some people. So you have pimps, drug dealers, religious entrepreneurs, people who realize that my only option in life is politics. I don't have any other skill. So this is it. So you were attracting those pool of people who see that because we were drinking with this one a year ago. Look at him. He's got now bodyguards.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, this thing is possible. This is a South African dream.
Yeah, it's a career opportunity.
Yes. No. This is the South African dream. Yes. It requires bravery.
Yeah.
So with bravery, we can really go in there.
Mm.
So that now this is where you get your leaders. There's nothing that sets any standard.
Yeah.
Of what leadership
should be.
So then you'd find Salga telling us that close to a third of councillors don't know how to operate their computers. During the time of hard COVID and lockdown, we're seeing videos when we're having Salga meetings, eh? We're seeing these old people who don't know how to operate Zoom, who are doing things they should not be doing.
Yeah.
They don't know how to switch off the camera, they don't know how to switch off Zoom. Hey, we're seeing things that, and it, as funny as it is, but it's also a manifestation that you've got people who must deal with the context of the times we find ourselves in, technology, innovation, all those complexities, and be able not just to deal with the current, but project the future and work towards the future, but equally mobilize resources. Towards the future. Because the difficult part with leadership is not resolving today's challenges. It's tomorrow's challenges. When you, so in the, let's use Eskom as an example.
Yeah.
My firm belief of the challenges of Eskom is a repair and maintenance issue.
Mm-hmm.
So they put the bulk of the money in the two power stations. What has happened to the repairs and maintenance? Not now, over the past 20 years.
Yeah.
So had we just maintained regularly, you had COVID, people are sitting at home. PRASA had time to maintain its fleet, maintain its network, and electricity. All big institutions of government had time, almost a year, to do, big operational maintenance. But they didn't take that opportunity.
Mm.
So all of us were just caught with our hands napping and all sitting at home. Airports are rotting away. So now you must come back and restart the thing. So no one thought, we've got time here.
Mm. We are so good at being shocked at everything.
But let me tell you why. It's because leadership wants to have a particular circumstance. So all this is by mistake.
Yeah.
We create problems and emergency so we can circumvent procurement and steal more. According to me, none of this is a mistake.
Yeah.
All that's happening is for the movement of money, from one to the next and create an environment and circumstance where the abnormal is accepted as the new norm.
Yeah.
Again, that's a function of leadership that weakens governance. Mm. So when you don't lead properly and ensure you strengthen governance and you ensure that there's regular maintenance on the operations that sustains, because if you don't maintain your operations, you can't sustain.
No.
Then it compromises the accounting statement of an entity becoming an ongoing concern because of repairs and maintenance. But again, all of this goes to leadership. Now, where does leadership come from? Do you see?
Yeah.
You see why we are where we are. I mean, in Mfuleni, we've got a mayor there now who was shocked to be a mayor. He had his pizza shop. His biggest ambition in the past election was to become the ward councillor in his ward.
Yeah.
And to really take over from his mentor, who was a former ward councillor.
Yeah.
And now he gets to council. There's no PR councillors from the ANC. And they're looking across the room and saying, but who's going to do this thing? Okay. Oh, Khate Bozala. I'm laughing about this, but it's also...
But it's sad.
It's sad. Because that's what we have. And consider the challenges of Mfuleni.
Yes.
And the type of mind you need to grapple with the complex environment, the rot of Mfuleni, the infrastructure, the future of Mfuleni. Mm. So what's at stake here is the future of Mfuleni.
Sure. Is there a future anyway?
There is a future. Charlie Chapman says in one of his speeches on great dictators, for as long as humans die, there's hope.
Wow.
So nothing is permanent. I think out of the mess is going to rise something that's going to ensure that we replace this mess.
Mm, mm.
So there's a void that will be filled in majority of these.
Yeah.
Many South Africans, and I'm really happy where we're going as a country insofar as the civil awakeness. So the civil activism is starting to wake up.
Yeah, there's something, one almost get a sense that there's something brewing on the ground, right?
It's the irritation.
Mm.
So people, the ANC, they did not appreciate that pushing South Africans further and further and further will have consequences.
Mm.
It won't be through the gun. It will be through the vote, which will be a powerful statement. And what's the beauty of this is that South Africans can look across SADC, what has happened in Zambia, in Malawi.
Mm.
This thing is not too far from here. We are too well on our course towards a second political transition in our country after 1994.
Mm.
And then again, leadership has allowed for it to get here.
Mm.
And what's going to get us out of the position we're in is leadership. It's quality, ethical leadership that has the experience to deal with the complex environment we find ourselves in, be able to resolve the most immediate challenges, not compromising the future. So to create a firm balance about where we are, we need to resolve these things over a period of time, improvement, but the future. What's the future of the country in energy? Mm. What's the future of the country in water?
Yeah.
You see, we're still struggling with electricity now. We've not thought about water.
Water. No, absolutely, yeah.
And that's a pending crisis. Mm. Water will be an even serious crisis that will devastate communities and people. And the way we treat with sewage water, I mean, it's less liquid platinum. All we do is treat to some extent back to the river system and then wait. And there's no appreciation that we must reuse water more than 4 or 5 times and circulate before we get back into the river.
Wow.
And how we plan new cities, access to infrastructure, mobility.
Mm.
So these are things that, for me, excite me with the problems. The more there's problems, I think, then I've got a reason to be in that space to try and solve those problems to the extent that I can. But we've got a leadership environment that has been created in the country which encourages, rewards incompetence.
Hmm.
So people think Banyaza Lusufi rushing from one
school
to the next when something has happened is leadership. But it's crisis management. So he's
doing someone else's job, right?
He shouldn't be there. He should have prevented it. That's leadership. The foresight.
Foresight, yeah.
Our environment is changing. Socioeconomic status is changing. What these things happening in society are going to find expression in our schools.
Yes.
What do we do to prevent that and to ensure that there's a social compact within these schools, understanding what needs to happen?
Yeah.
So it's a reactionary thing when there's a
instead
problem.
Of being proactive. Yeah, we've always been reactive to situations. We always wait for a situation to reach crisis point, and that's when we want to intervene. Yes. Yeah, we're still with Bongani Baloyi, who is from Action SA, former mayor of Midvale, and we are busy discussing issues of, you know, governance, what's needed for good governance, you know, poor service delivery challenges, how do we address those? They are all over in the country, you know, if one must add. And talking about the service delivery issue, Bongani, there's this issue of Section 139, you know, that always crops up, you know, when a municipality is placed under administration. You'll correct me if I'm wrong, but according to my understanding, before you reach or arrive at, you know, that decision to place a certain municipality under administration, that should be the last resort, right? Because then you've got, you know, your different spheres of government. You've got national, you've got province. What role should province be playing, you know, in making sure that your local municipalities are doing what's expected of them?
You are quite right. 139 and 154 should be the last resort. And there's no empirical evidence that shows that once 139 or 154 was invoked, there was improvement of performance.
Yeah.
Instead, it becomes worse.
Mm.
It's a mechanism used to remove, to deal with political challenges. Now, when you've got an administrator, he's the administrator and the sole person making decisions, including procurement, and there's no oversight over, except to the MEC.
Yeah.
But let's take a few steps back. When I was mayor, every month I would get financial reports and would send to the MEC of Cooperative Governance and Finance and Treasury.
Yeah.
Not once did I get a request for a meeting on the basis of these reports. Not once did I get, can we have a deeper conversation about the status of your municipality? When we went to a meeting with the MEC of Cooperative Governance and the Premier, and they would project the state of municipalities, it would always be 4 months late, 4 months behind. So they were not looking at the live current situation. Mm. We were looking at 4 months. So now you are discussing 4 months behind and saying the report which is before us now, which is 4 months late, and you are dealing with those problems, forgetting that already now you are in the next quarter towards the finalization of that new quarter. So now I'm pointing at two things. MEC of Cooperative Governance and Treasury are complicit to the state of municipalities because they do nothing. They've got powers to do something about and to insist on a number of things and to put interventions, recovery plans, but they do very late because they like these meetings that mean nothing, where it's a top-down approach, but rather it's not a meeting where you dive into municipalities regularly and say, what are the problems? So let's deal with the problems and let's be able to support you. Not at the end, but let's happen with you as things are happening.
Exactly.
So no one is moving at the same pace with local government, the same interest.
There's no synergy.
There's no synergy whatsoever at all. But beyond this, the synergy is an outcome of appreciation of leadership, what you need to do in that space. But it's not the case. That's completely void. So reports are being sent to two portfolio departments in province. Nothing happens after that. They wait too late to do something about it. A year is finished. You want to talk about the past year.
Yeah.
So it doesn't make sense. Number two, when they look at a reporting period, they look at a quarter behind. So they're not happening with things as they happen. Number three, the MECs, these two MECs and the Premier become very important because when they engage with local government, they should be looking at holistically what is the state of the province, where are the challenges. So when we engage in IDP, the IDP process, which is a budgetary process and plans for the municipality, none of provincial governments ever come. So these two spheres of government are planning in isolation.
Sure.
So province is doing its own thing, sometimes comes and calls it in Dirisano just to save face. And then municipalities go through it, their 14 wards, 100 wards, engaging with people. And then these two documents, the IDP must be, the integrated development plan must be sent to province. And now they must give comments and say, no, include our thing. But how can we include it when you have not engaged with
us?
So there's a void, there's a void of planning that's not properly filled and coordination. So then you get to a stage where you get 139, 154. It often happens towards an ANC Congress when there's a battle of resources.
Yeah.
So they leave these to fester, these situations to fester. And the financial plan that the financial reports that we send every month to province indicates revenue and expenditure against revenue, collection, performance on CAPEX. So when you're looking at those things and you see this is not moving, and now you are 4 months back, so you've lost a quarter already. So when you're looking at quarter one, you're already towards quarter two. You're finishing quarter two. What interventions are you going to make? So there's not a full appreciation of the type of leadership and the hands-on type of approach you need at this point in time that deals with this. So then they invoke these 139, 154. It's a mess. The situation is deep.
Hey, you know what? What I find actually worrying is Mfuleni, as an example. It was placed under administration. Just yesterday, I saw a message on a Facebook group which suggested that province has now decided we're lifting that section 139. But when you go back to Mfuleni and you look at the situation, there hasn't been any improvement.
It's worsened. There's been a complete, worsened state of Mfuleni in its finances, in its operating environment, in its leadership. It's now a coalition government with all of these challenges. Mfuleni is in the worst off position at this stage. And I think it's the Premier Makura's legacy. Mfuleni, Charlotte Maxeke.
Yeah.
Life as a demand, PPE procurement, that is Makura's legacy. So what is happening in Mfuleni could have been prevented long ago.
Sure.
And if you go and ask how much have been spent, it's close to 2 billion rands. It's spent, but we see nothing. The sewer is still running down.
Yeah.
And there's more interventions. Then the deputy president leading another intervention will come and promise and give the farmers. And in fact, what is more worrying now is the approach taken more by more communities, which then go to court to say, we want to set up a trust. We are going to pay into a trust. We are going to maintain our own roads and our sewerage. There's a precedent now, which is happening in the Free State.
Yeah. You remember even in Northwest, the Koster, Swartrechen site. Yeah.
Yeah. So now there's a precedent. Of people taking key functions away from government because government is useless.
Yeah.
So I really think if you look at that 139 and 154 process, it should be as a last mechanism. And I believe there's no case if you look at what they try to do in Tshwane, Salga was quite clear, this thing is wrong, what you're doing in Gauteng. You have not met the prescripts, you've not done what you should have done. In fact, it's the political coy to get hold of Tshwane.
Yeah.
And look at the financial position of Tshwane before the administrators came in and after. 2 billion rands in the hole.
Sure.
So we must not call them administrators. We must call them professional bank robbers.
Yeah. Interesting. And how do we get out of this mess, Bongani, going forward?
Leadership. First thing is leadership. So our people must really take an interest into who they lead, the competence of who they elect to lead. They must participate in this. Despondence is going to give them worse.
But I'm sorry to cut you there, but, you know, in terms of people should, you know, be looking at who, you know, they will elect, you know, to lead them and so forth. I mean, if you look at, for instance, the process that happens within the governing ANC, I mean, they've got branches, you know, branches elect leaders. One is not even sure if those branch leaders, you know, even have discussions, you know, with a important people on the ground, which are the citizens, to say, if we choose so-and-so or if we nominate so-and-so, do you agree? I mean, can we have a discussion about, you know, for instance, the qualities of that person that we wish to nominate, you know, to be elected?
Look, there's obviously an internal party system for all parties.
Yeah.
Some citizens may join, be a member, and engage in those. But ultimately, when a candidate is presented, citizens must interrogate that candidate, the quality thereof, and the ability, capability, experience as well of that candidate. They must really interrogate that. And they must be very jealous. See, I think citizens must really be jealous in this case. They must vote for their future.
Yeah.
This thing of voting for Mandela. And I'm not saying it nasty. I've got no business except he's done his part. We honor him, but I don't need to do anything to honor him. I must do what I do today for my future.
Sure.
I'm very clear about that. He's done his part. My grandmother voted for him. They loved him. Kuphelele lapho. Manje, I'm in charge of my agency for the future that I want.
Yeah.
And I'm very jealous about the future I want for my children and grandchildren as well. And I also want to say I've participated. So we are voting for our future. So, and the role we as Action SA need to play is to speak to people who are unregistered, not voting, those who are registered and not voting. Those are the people we need to speak to. So we need to inspire and encourage people to come towards a process that says, let's vote for something. And let's not vote against the ANC. Let's not vote the ANC about, but let's vote for something.
And I suppose those are the people who are always disgruntled. You know, those are the people who are always taken to the streets, you know, to vent, you know, express their frustration at poor service delivery.
Absolutely. And the best way to vent is on election day, where you take your vote and you borrow to someone else and you leave them hanging. The ANC has made a very strong case to South Africans that they need to be out of government.
Yeah.
They need to be out of government. They need to go and find themselves, go on a long retreat, go and self-introspect while we are busy, Tina.
Yeah.
while we are busy.
Yeah.
They need to, I mean, a number of them need to go and reflect while they're in jail. Under the custody of the state. They need to enjoy the protection of the state, the diet of the state, as they do now as ministers.
Yeah.
So it must be a simple process from minister driving, as they did with our former president, where the protectors drove him to prison. Imagine.
We've seen so many things in this country. Now, let's talk briefly about you know, your role in Action SA. I mean, recently I had an interview with your party leader, Herman Mashaba, and he was basically saying that you guys are planning to go all out, you know, in terms of, you know, contesting all 9 provinces. I mean, almost every month or week we hear, hey, Action SA is announcing a new chairperson in a certain province and so forth. Your role is in Gauteng, obviously. Right. What would you say would be the most, you know, key issues that, you know, you would want to focus on.
Yeah.
With regards to service delivery in Gauteng.
Look, I think when you speak issues of Gauteng, you must also speak about them within the context of what election.
Yeah.
If it's a local government election, then you speak more to the bread and butter issues. But over and above the bread and butter issues, I think there's 2 issues that need to be elevated that would affect Gauteng and where a provincial government needs to have a plan on.
Yeah.
And that's on security of water, sanitation, and electricity. Those 3 things are very important for a province such as Gauteng to have a long-term plan and to ensure that there's security of supply of electricity, sanitation, and reliable water.
Mm-hmm.
Those 3 things are at top of the agenda for me. So then when you speak of provincial competence, of those issues, primary health care and education are very important, and issues of safety around Gauteng. So if we don't guarantee the 3 things from a local government I spoke to about, it undermines the economic performance of Gauteng.
Sure.
So if we don't guarantee water, sanitation, electricity, how do we speak to industry, an industry of the future?
Yeah.
And Gauteng can be turned around primarily leveraging on manufacturing. I think manufacturing still has a big place to play in Gauteng. And you can't guarantee or keep manufacturing if you don't deliver the 3, electricity, sanitation, water.
Yeah.
So primary health care needs to be dealt with. We also need to apply our minds carefully around primary health care, but how we involve the private sector. I think they've got a key role to play.
Sure.
So it does not make sense to me when I consider some of the biggest private hospitals and you consider Barra, Charlotte McLeod, and you say, but there's capacity in the country.
Yeah.
And those people who can do this. So we need to find a way of blending the two and ensuring that we deliver services affordable to our people that's of a quality and standard. But equally, the difficult part that we're going to do in Gauteng is ask ourselves the question, we've got these pop-up shacks all over Gauteng. Who are living there?
Yeah.
Who are these people? We've accepted that there's issues of land housing. And people. No. We get the housing. We get migration. But the government has stayed away from doing a most difficult thing of getting into the space and finding out, but who are you? We know we've got the migration problem of illegal foreigners.
Sure.
So we are growing villages and suburbs and areas here where we don't know who's living there. Because the next question is, once they are there and legitimately there, how do you provide services?
Yeah.
And you need to plan for that with local municipalities. And who are you providing services for? Primarily the South Africans? Or is it other people? And how do you deal with the issue of immigration in Gauteng? And I really think that there's going to be a big drive in Gauteng to have an engagement with the Department of Home Affairs for a joint collaboration.
Yeah.
And where the function is closer to some extent with a partnership in Gauteng, where the specific drives within within working with the with law enforcement to do something with. So it has to be a consistent thing that Gauteng does.
Yeah.
Never mind just talking about it. And one of the things we're going to focus on that speaks to the local economies. And when we speak local economies, city pinto zabantu bamnyama manje. In townships, you find black people majority in tuck shops. Not any longer. It was. Now it's Somalis, Pakistanis. Yeah. These are entrepreneurs coming into the country. Yeah. I don't understand that. So this bill that the Gauteng government has gone through and tabled in the legislature and approved must be effected. We must ensure that within a space of time, one, we deal with what are we going to replace with?
Yeah.
Which deals with the warehousing, storage, the procurement, and the distribution to local South Africans. So government must play a role.
Yeah.
What is Gauteng Enterprise Propeller doing?
Yeah.
Finding friends. When you should be finding sectors that speak to millions of South Africans.
Mm.
So one of the things we're going to change is really think carefully about the mandate of these funding institutions for business.
Mm.
What their focus is, what their mandate is, we must redefine that. Because that's the arm for government and us intervening in industry. And how do we say remove Somalis, remove Pakistanis, and you don't replace with something else where you give people access and you get them ensure that it's a value chain? Because it's a value chain that's serious.
Yeah.
If you go from the procurement, the warehousing, the distribution, and the people at the front end.
Mm.
So then the transport part is very important for our thing. As much as we are compact, but we also need to ensure that we have transport systems and routes that make sense.
Mm.
Because transport is a very big enabler of economic development. Sure. We're moving goods and services.
Yeah.
We are also moving people together from one location to the next. And the issue of rail is important. We need rail to be working again. So there has to be an engagement to protect rail, to reinvest in rail and to ensure that it's reliable. I mean, it's one of the cheapest forms of transportation. Mm. And we must also, in Gauteng, get more people back to their trains and get
lesser cars also on the road.
Absolutely, but trucks. We need commodities on the tracks, not on the trucks. So that's something we need to get into when we look at Gauteng. And I think looking at all of those things together holistically is going to build a particular environment where we create a normal, sustainable Gauteng for growth.
Mm.
Then the question then becomes, what do you do after? Because now you're not starting as a point of departure from normal. Now you must rebuild to normal and have a foundation.
Yeah.
While then by year three, then the manifestation of where we're going comes into place.
Mm.
And we're also alive to the fact that when you get to government, we'll find it in the middle of a financial year.
Yeah.
So we must wrap up that part. Mm. We must also plan deep into what we're going to do in year two, year three, year four to include a new government program. So we are well versed with the thinking around that. It's just now speaking to more people about specific parts and how to respond to the gains that the Western Cape is making.
Yeah.
There's more international routes now going straight to Western Cape, which used to come through Gauteng and then via. And that means we are losing people who sleep one night extra here.
Yeah.
So how do we respond as that is Gauteng?
Sure.
So it's those questions that from a deep fundamental place, how do we do that? How to ensure that people in Gauteng, as compact as it is, can do anything that they want?
Mm.
There was the Nugent Game Reserve by the Premier Shilawa stage. What has happened to it? Gauteng Sekerepos Nature Reserve, the Vau Dam. We've got these beautiful things. We're not doing anything because our leadership is only thinking, where's the forces? Up on my vote. Where's the man? So they're thinking that and not being animated by all of these pieces of the puzzles sitting. So if you ask one person, they look at the puzzle and be despondent. But from where I stand, I am excited. I'm itching to get my hands on this puzzle and start forming this picture and start working towards the future.
And I mean, is it possible though to achieve those, you know, great goals through, for instance, a coalition, you know, arrangement in 2024?
I think it's very possible to do. Yeah. So coalitions are going to be a fact of reality for us for the foreseeable future. And the beauty about these things is that we need to get to a stage where, with the experience we have of coalitions, we must agree on the plan.
Mm.
We must agree on the plan.
Yeah.
So coalition partners must meet and be able to understand their plan.
Yes.
And nothing else exists after that. No one's manifesto exists after that except the plan.
And it must be in black and white. Yeah.
Absolutely. So we must have an initial coalition agreement, and then you establish the coalition, you establish government, and you must have a plan.
Mm.
And that plan is going to be an annual performance plan adopted and by the government to be delivered. There's not going to be any side thing. So citizens are going to know the glue that's putting these ones together is this document.
Yeah.
And we're going to use this document to evaluate them. And I think the things I've spoken about, though, there's no ideological discussions. It's very practical things. Very practical things. What do you do? I mean, Western Cape has more roots international than they were had 5 years ago.
Yeah.
How has that affected Gauteng?
Yeah.
How does Gauteng intentionally now attract people to come here? And when they come here, what do they experience? So we are located next to these municipalities, next to these provinces. We're in the center, really. How to ensure that we don't lose out on various other things? In vis-a-vis mining, the beneficiation of mining, what's the position of Gauteng? So there's many things that don't require whether you're socialist, capitalist.
Yeah.
It's very practical things we must respond to.
I mean, you remind me of, you know, something very important also, tourist attraction, and we shall discuss with your colleague in Northwest, Kwena Mangope. I mean, if you look back in the years, Northwest, you know, the former Bophuthatswana, Tswana, you know, how attractive it used to be. You know, a lot of things used to happen in Northwest, in Mafikeng, for instance, the capital. You know, but if you go there today, I mean, the other time I went to do a story, and I went, drove past some huge recording studio where the likes of Donna Summer, your Michael Jacksons of this world came and recorded songs, your Brahim Masekelas of this world. Go and look at the state that is in now at the moment. We don't look after, you know, our heritage as well.
Leadership, repairs and maintenance.
Yeah.
Two things. And the governance
mechanism
and institution you build to sustain that. Because once you're not there, things must not happen because Bongani is no longer there.
Yeah.
But the system must continuously deliver consistently the same result.
Yes.
And people must just keep tweaking.
Yeah, here and there. Yeah.
But on our side, when we come back into Yamang, That's what they say. Ah, that's Bongani's thing. Leave this thing. Yeah. Understanding the maturity. Yes. So those things need to be protected, enhanced, and ensure that we market them more and ensure that there's legacy projects and people who come and follow, speak the very same story. Because I can tell you, people who can see that that facility, that building was made way out of this community to the world.
Yeah.
And what it actually means, then people want to give back and be part of this thing. But we've not done that with many institutions. Where it took leaders to envision the future and provide things that enabled human energy and agency to thrive and flourish. I often say to people, had I met golf when I was 9, I would not be sitting here with you. You'd be watching me on TV.
Yeah.
But because of life,
life happens.
I can't control.
Yeah.
Now I am here.
Yeah.
Now I must be grappling with all of these things.
Yeah.
So we must ensure that we expose our young people across the country in different places to different things. Where they can see that if I'm not gifted in education, I may like golf, rugby, wrestling.
Yeah.
Now there's interaction at a local level where I start to fall in love. I mean, when I was mayor of Midvale, we had a few rugby clinics in Stel.
That informal settlement.
Informal settlement.
Yeah.
We took a rugby clinic there. Now I understood that some people won't see the vision, but I wanted to ignite a love for the sport. So when we're looking at, we're dealing with ones from 7 years old to 10 who were then majority. And I saw a few of them touch the ball for the first time.
Yeah.
And being passed by this big white guy. And being passed the ball and being given a few coaches. You start to see raw talent. Raw talent. And when we did this, I think by 3 years later, the group was growing more and more and more. And now you start hearing that there's a taxi that identifies some talent in Stelo, takes it to Meyerton, practices, and there's a development. And I thought to myself, why did we not build a rugby field in Stelo?
Wow.
The potential sitting there.
Yeah.
In one sporting code. The potential. And then you want to cry about what the Springboks looks like, and yet in Stelo there's nothing. And the people who make it through the Springboks, must go through the Ivy League schools.
Yeah.
And then we think that's the fight to fight.
Yeah.
The fight to fight for me is the infrastructure, the local level, and the support, nutrition management, and ensuring that there's people who are skilled to coach these young talents.
And I'm glad you mentioned that. I mean, isn't it about time also that we go back to basics, you know, to the days where we used to have sports, Wednesday sports in schools? I mean, you can mention people like, you know, Dr. Kumalos of this world. How did they become what they are today? They started somewhere. So someone was there taking care of, you know, spotting their talent, mm-hmm. nurturing it properly, developing it properly, yeah. preparing it for the bigger stage.
Completely agree. And for that to happen, we need infrastructure. Mm. We need to have a very uncomfortable conversation with SATU.
Yeah.
We need to have a financial model for this and understand the returns won't be financial, but it will be 4 or 5 years later when you start to see someone who started with Dr. Kumal.
Mm.
And you've got these various legends sitting at home and doing nothing.
Yeah.
And these people who, these are the people who should be involved at the, in the value chain of sports.
Yeah.
And who spot the talent from earlier on develop while they are moving through this education system.
Mm.
So I was fortunate in the high school I went to. We had teachers who some had interest in the sport, but they also got external assistance. Parents used to pay the coaches.
Wow.
So we had a coach who, when we trained, I played rugby, I played cricket as well.
Mm.
So it was like a normal school. We're medium school in the Val, but if you look at Gauteng broadly, we could not even compete in a small school.
Mm.
This is where school to refer.
Oh.
So when I was there, we had so much support from sports and after school.
Mm.
So, and these are people who had the interest to know where I live, my status, status at home, met my parents. After school, you used to often drop me off and speak to my parents and about what they have observed about my behavior, asking if things are okay at home.
Mm.
So I had that advantage of that environment.
Sure.
Now imagine putting that environment across also.
Oh, I mean, you also, you know, keep a lot of young kids, you know, from wrong things. I mean,
absolutely.
Just yesterday, there was a story at one school in Vereeniging General Smarts. One pupil was stabbed to death. I mean, then what for? You understand? And such things can be, prevented from happening.
Absolutely. And I think we must also appreciate that what is happening in our society becoming more and more violent, is going to find expression in our schools.
Absolutely.
There should be something we do to ensure that does not happen. There should be a way of engaging with our young people in a way that keeps them interested in what they need to do and focused as well. And appreciate that things have changed.
Yeah.
So how you engage with this new cohort of young people should be different within the context of today.
Mm.
But strictness is very important.
Yes.
The one thing I valued about my high school that I went to, there was discipline.
Discipline.
So it was about the tradition.
Yeah.
Discipline.
Yeah.
And the consistency.
Yes.
And perseverance.
Yeah.
So those are the things that were drummed into to your mind, the discipline aspect. Yeah. And I think schools, because of all of these challenges in the socioeconomic state, have really left some of these things on the side.
Mm, mm.
But I think it's a very fluid environment that needs us when we come and take over to think deeply about the challenges of education and how we fix those challenges of education and ensure there's deployment of enough infrastructure and the support and the talent and different sporting goals for young people to do.
Yeah.
One thing I appreciate, I think what Banyaza has done is the specialized schools as well, which is a very good thing. It's giving young people a new path. So when we come over, that's one legacy of his we'll protect.
Yeah.
So he must rest assured. That one will definitely, we'll name it after him.
Yeah. And I'm glad the education is such an important, thing in society. And again, it reminds me of, I don't know, there's this difference between public education and, your private. You see it every year when the matric results are announced.
Mm-hmm.
There's always that huge, gap difference between, the two. At the end of the day, they all fall under one sector, education.
Yeah.
And I suppose that gap also now needs to be bridged. It's long overdue.
Absolutely. Competent, qualified teachers.
Yeah.
And improving the quality.
Mm.
Of learning, improving or reducing the ratio of teacher learner per teacher also affects the quality of learning and the environment as well, and the leadership of these institutions, principals, HODs.
Yeah.
So how do you appoint principals?
Yeah.
What's the role of SATU?
What happened to the inspectors that we used to have back
we
in the
need,
days?
We see that's the one part after you've said this is what you need to do. You need a mechanism that monitors and evaluates outside of the control of the principals.
Yeah.
So that is something definitely we must bring back to the table, because we must have an independent and objective measure that says to us the environment, the schooling environment is the following.
Yeah.
We are meeting our own standards.
Mm.
Is maintenance happening? Is the schools clean? Now there's issues of drugs. What do we do with issues of drugs in schools? Mm. And one of the things that we are going to do, and as Gauteng, is that we're going to stop having private securities protect government institutions in Gauteng. We are going to have police officers, which will be absorbed through a process protecting all of these institutions. Mm. So when you come to a school, it will be someone who can equally arrest you.
And
who's properly trained.
Trained, yeah.
So that's what we are going to do to protect across all areas which speaks to a provincial government office or a block. We're going to imagine government officials being protected by private security. Imagine.
Yeah. It just doesn't make sense.
It doesn't make sense. Uh-huh. You need an officer of the law, appropriately trained, maybe at a peace officer level, but who can effect an arrest, issue a warning, and do what it's in terms of the law that they can do.
Mm.
But you need someone when they are there, you know, this is law enforcement.
Yes.
So over and above what you do, so if there's an incident in school, they can immediately arrest you.
Yes.
If in the community you are doing something, then they can arrest you.
Yeah.
And that's what we're going to bring. We're going to, unfortunately for the security companies, they will thrive in private sector.
Yeah.
But in the Gauteng provincial government, within the first term, they won't have a space to play.
Wow. You know what? The time is on our side. I mean, we can continue, you know, the whole day talking about, you know, all the issues affecting us. But perhaps as a parting shot, your message to Gauteng residents in particular, you know, ahead of the 2024 in a general election?
Look, I think as Action SA and as the chairperson of Action SA, we are really building a formidable organization that needs to respond to the challenges of Gauteng and deal with the issues of the future of Gauteng. We also are approaching the problems we face from a very pragmatic perspective, and we really want to work with Gauteng residents.
Mm-hmm.
I think Gauteng has to wake up from its slumber and really take its seat and be at the forefront of an economic resurgence, of an industrial resurgence, innovation resurgence, and also resolving at the front of the pack issues such as technology and green technology and new technologies as well. So we're really excited about envisioning a new Gauteng, which becomes the epicenter of excellence, epicenter of technology that will be imported to the rest of the country.
Mm-hmm.
So we really want to get back to the command seat for the rest of the country to catch up and use us as a benchmark.
Mm-hmm.
That's where Gauteng is going to go, with the leadership of Action SA, with what our country deserves. So we need to turn our townships to areas of economic activity, hive of activity, innovation, where people have a purpose, where young people will be safe, where young people have options to pursue their own agencies, and where issues such as gender-based violence we're going to deal with.
Mm-hmm.
Not just march and say, not in our name, but we must deal with. And part of the challenge of gender-based violence is not resolving the issue of economic emancipation of women.
Mm-hmm.
And that's going to be at the center of the development. We can't develop our country and leave women behind and not ensure that they're economically liberated. Okay. And that's going to be at the center of our message and delivery as well.
Absolutely. No, thank you so much once again, Bongani, for joining us.
Thank you so much.
Right. Folks, we were chatting to Bongani Baloyi from Action SA. He's the chairperson of the party in Gauteng province, former mayor of Midvale local municipality. We're, you know, discussing all issues about service delivery. How can we, you know, improve that? And, you know, how do we get ourselves out of the mess that we find ourselves in? And it's been truly a great pleasure having a chat with Bongani this afternoon. Folks, this is it. Until we meet again for another edition of the Citizen Talk. And talking about that, our next guest in the coming week is going to be also chairperson of Action SA from the Northwest Province. And I call it the troubled Northwest Province. Troubled in the sense of, you know, poor service delivery. And I'm talking about Gwena Mangope. He's the son of the former leader of the former Bantustan, Bophuthatswana, Lucas Mangope. So we'll be in conversation with him as well, as, you know, to talk to us about, you know, service delivery issues there. How do they plan to, you know, solve some of the many, many issues that the residents of Northwest are faced with? It's been a great pleasure being in your company. Till we meet again, between now and then, you take good care of yourself. Cheers.